what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you are listening to All Ball, All Basketball, all the time. And you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays, 3 to 6 Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific. You can download the podcast wherever you download this podcast. You know, if you go to iTunes, whatever, same kind of thing. You listen to your Fox Sports Radio affiliate or on Sirius XM or on the Dan Patrick channel. Okay, remember, we're on the Dan Patrick channel on Sirius XM. Sirius 217 and XM 203. Those are the numbers, in case you're wondering. Daily show, not just hoops, all sports, Doug Gottlieb Show. It's been like, how many years now? Like 12 years I've been doing the kind of afternoon spot nationally, three different networks. I think you'll like it. Let me get to a couple of hoops nuggets. Let's start with Carmelo Anthony. Now, I do feel like at some point somebody's going to take a little bit of the bait. Maybe it's Brooklyn because they won't have Kevin Durant early in the season. The problem with the idea of Brooklyn, even though that's a home away from home for him, is that Brooklyn's whole thing was their culture. And they are completely, completely into the idea of analytics. They only take threes or layups. That's really it. Threes, layups, alley-oops, free throws. That's about it. They are analytics basketball. That's what Kenny Atkinson believes in. It's going to be a challenge for him, though, with Kyrie Irving, who likes to over-dribble, will take some mid-range shots, will take some fadeaways, and then the same will be interesting when they get Kevin Durant healthy. But man, Carmelo, he doesn't seem to fit at all with what they've been doing. And the big thing with Melo is, like, look, he can't guard anybody anymore. He didn't guard anybody early in his career. Now he can't guard anybody, and it becomes even worse. I guess I'm disappointed in USA basketball, not in USA basketball, but in NBA players who choose to work out all the time and don't want to work out with Greg Popovich and play representing our country. Part of me thinks that maybe the thing to do is to make the Olympics go back to the amateur, you know, go back to using our AMs. Now, it would probably mean we're not going to win gold medals, but the World Cup can be for the NBA players. The Olympics could be for the college kids. Why not? That's what it used to be about. And the only reason we changed was we had a terrible team in 1988. We got beat by guys that some of whom were in fact pros. And instead of getting better, we just like, let's go get our best guys and stomp the world, which we did. And they're now kind of catching up to us. If our NBA players only want to play in the Olympics, fine. Let's play the AMs otherwise. But the truth is that the World Cup is designed for the pros and the Olympics is designed for the AMs. Let's go back to the amateurs or at least cap it at 23, 24 years old. Have it for the young guys. We may end up getting beat in the World Cup. I think that's going to show our depth. You know, the difference in us and other countries is the depth of quality players, the depth of quality athletes. We'll see if we have the shot makers, but it might actually be better team basketball than we played when we played international competition before. I don't think we should close the door on using amateurs, especially in the Olympics, even if it causes us to not medal.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let's get to a couple other interesting news from around the league. Tyronn Lue, probably going to join the staff of the L.A. Clippers. I know this is going to be seen as a win for the Clippers. Let's be honest, there's a previous relationship that exists between Doc Rivers and Ty Lue. I think Ty Lue made a mistake. Yeah, it was a three-year deal. But think about the team that he's coaching now as an assistant and think about being the head coach of the Lakers in the same building. Were the Lakers driving a hard, maybe slightly unreasonable bargain? Yeah, sure. But it's their prerogative to do so, right? It's their prerogative to do so. And so, in my mind, I think that Ty Lue made a mistake. Obviously, now he and Jason Kidd are going to be sitting there as two kind of head coaches and waiting for any of the jobs that could, in fact, come open. It doesn't mean I don't like the hire from the Clippers. You got Doc Rivers, who previously employed Tyronn Lue. He brings a ton of respect. He's won an NBA title. Like, all of that stuff makes sense. I'm just telling you from Tyronn Lue's perspective, it's a mistake that he didn't take the Lakers job. And then let's get to the NCAA backing down from the quote-unquote Rich Paul rule. It's really Christian Dawkins' rule. And even in how it's being pitched by the media, it's a win for social media and a win for Rich Paul, who's grandfathered in to the NBAPA's agent approval system. It's so funny. The NBAPA and the NFLPA have prerequisites that you need a degree. Of course, the NBAPA, you can appeal and get an exemption. That's what happened to Rich Paul. But they have these degree requirements already in place, which is basically what the NCAA kind of changed to doing. I don't think there should be. And he said, like, I don't think you're asking a ton to get a guy, to get somebody who has a bachelor's degree. And the logic behind it is this. The NCAA is trying to tell you we value education. We want people who understand what a degree brings to the table when they're telling you whether or not you should stay and get your degree or you should leave and go to the pros. But the NCAA, as they've been prone to do, cowered to public opinion, and they backed down like a week later, even after backing up their point, which is a smart one, which is, hey, the NFLPA has this. The NFLPA, you actually have to have an advanced degree. You have to be a lawyer or have a master's degree. How come no one calls that racist? How come no one points out that? Why? The culture of basketball, so many AAU coaches, uncles, people who aren't really competent, don't have the ability to pick up the phone and call the right people and get the right feedback, are now the ones that have given feedback to these players. And every year we watch the draft, we're like, man, who's in that guy's ear? And now you know, apparently LeBron James and Rich Paul don't think that guys that aren't reputable are in people's ears or don't understand. It doesn't mean that having a college degree makes you more reputable. Actually, it makes you slightly more reputable because it makes you at least understand what there is some value in the college process. All right, let's welcome him in. He's a longtime college basketball analyst. He's worked for Fox Sports. He's actually hosted a Fox Sports radio show, CBS Sports Network, and now at ESPN, UCLA alum, Sean Farnham. Farnie, we've seen you on Get Up. You continue to expand. You know, you've done national radio. You've done local radio. When you grew up in Northern California, what was your childhood like?
Well, you know, I was raised by a part-time dental assistant. And a San Francisco police officer, and lived in the East Bay. And, you know, I was really fortunate to have parents that really did all that they could to try to further my opportunities. And neither one of my parents graduated from college. And so the opportunities to get the kind of education I did growing up and then going to De La Salle High School, which is obviously world renowned for its football program, but not a bad basketball program when you look at the Berry brothers, guys like Joe McClain, many guys have come after. They've won a couple state championships. Frank Alaco did a great job with that program after I left. But it was a tremendous launching point of teaching me the values of just hard work. And I watched my parents do it every single day. To afford to put me into private school, my dad would get off of working a midnight shift at the police department in San Francisco, drive straight to my school, and he'd work in the yard for recess and lunch just to get the reduction on the tuition so my family could afford it. So it was, you know, it was that kind of effort that I think has been a principle that I've kind of tried to take with me every day.
Wow. Where'd you grow up hooping?
I grew up playing just CYO basketball. I mean, club, as you know, Doug, we grew up kind of in a similar area. Club really didn't start getting going until, like, we were probably like in the sixth or seventh grade. It started to become a little bit more popular. Mm-hmm. And you see the teams like Orange County Hoops and whatnot, your dad's program, obviously. But I grew up playing local CYO at my youth school. And then it started finally in the club circuit. I was one of the first Oakland Soldiers teams that was actually formed by playing in the Slam and Jam League that had all the high school players from that area play in the spring. And then they formed their team from that, and that was my first real experience of playing on the club scene and traveling to the BCI tournament down in Arizona, being in Vegas, whatnot, and playing in the big time, which I'm glad they brought back this past year. But those were the fun times. I mean, because really a lot of those tournaments that we played in, it was just a lot of our local guys. We played against other teams in our general area. It wasn't necessarily as corporate as it is now, where you've got teams literally flying every single weekend back to the East Coast for some of these events to try to gain that exposure.
Who was on the team?
I would say the best player was Eddie House. Yeah. And not a bad player to have on your team. And, I tell Eddie this all the time. Most of my success on the club circuit, and we went to play in the BCI tournament down in Arizona when we were sophomores, and I was named actually a BCI All-American off of that tournament, which is basically the all-tournament team. But the reason why I was because I was smart enough to figure out that Eddie House was the best shooter in the gym. And so I would get the ball to Eddie and immediately set an on-ball screen. So one of two things was going to happen. They were going to go under. Eddie was going to hit the three. Or both guys who had been told by their coaches that guy can flat out shoot the ball would go to try to double him, and then I would slip the screen, and he would dump it down to me, and I'd just finish with a layup or a dunk. And so I was smart enough to figure that out real quick and made a living off of just setting on-ball screens for Eddie House. But Eddie was phenomenal in high school, as he was when he was at Arizona State as well. But he put up some huge numbers, and it was really a lot of fun to play with him. I played with a kid by the name of Stephen Moss Kelly. He ended up going to Eastern Washington and playing up there. We had a pretty good team, but Eddie was the star. There was no question about it.
Who recruited you?
Really, it was my recruiting to college was crazy, and everybody's got their story. But when I was entering my senior year, it was really the Air Force Academy and the University of Montana. Those were like the two schools that I was like, okay, I'm going to go to one of those two. And I got my full appointment to go to the Air Force Academy, and I was pretty certain I was going to go to the Air Force Academy. But that backdoor cut in 1996 against UCLA ended up being the key to opening up so much of what now has become my life. They lost to Princeton in the opening round of that NCAA tournament in 96, and the entire coaching staff flew to the state championship game in Sacramento to recruit a couple kids from Crenshaw. And De La Salle was the first time we ever made the state championship as a program. And I ended up having like 22 points and 15 rebounds in the state championship. And from that game, I got a ton of offers that came in late. And I'll never forget being told, hey, you got to call Jim Herrick. And I was like, okay, well, Jim's probably going to ask me to like work his camp or something. You know, I mean, like it's still UCLA, just a year removed from winning the national championship in 95. And so I called up Coach Herrick, and it was a Southern drawl. I said, Sean, you want to be a UCLA Bruin? And I was like, yeah, why? Like, what are you talking about? And so I ended up taking my official visit with Nate James, who, of course, is on Coach K's staff now at Duke, played at Duke, and spent a couple days down at UCLA. And they said, listen, here's the deal. We saw you play one game. If you come down here, you can earn a scholarship, but we're not going to give you a scholarship just by watching you play one game. And so that was a tough decision to make because I did get some scholarship offers late to a lot of other schools. Plus, I was really actually very interested in going to the Air Force Academy. Coach Minton did a great job like building that relationship and that trust with me through the process. And I looked at my parents. I said, you know what? Like, I'm not going to be a pro. I know that. I'm 6'6". I know I've pretty much tapped out to my peak as far as being, you know, I can still grow as a basketball player, but I'm not going to be a pro. Work gives me the best opportunity to be successful long-term. And I said, the education at UCLA, I think, could open up a lot of doors of opportunity. And so that's why I made the decision to go to UCLA. And, you know, it's paid off in spades just because of the way that four-year process went and some of the doors that actually opened up while I was there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think the location and the name UCLA and the success of the program, even though – like, they don't even have a broadcasting major at UCLA, do they? Communications major?
Yeah, I was a history major.
Yeah, well, everybody's a history major.
I thought I was going to be a history teacher and a high school basketball coach. And I kind of fell into the broadcasting thing because Bill McDonald was calling our games at the time for Fox Sports West. And it was a game that we were playing against, actually, Arizona State. And I was always in the gym. Like, you know, we'd finish eating and I'd be right back in the gym just getting up shots. I knew I wasn't going to play a lot. In particular in my sophomore season, and was like, you know what, I'm just going to get shots up, get my workout in. And so I was just go right back to the court. And so I was talking with Bill, and I said, you got an easy job. And he goes, well, how would you do it? And I did a mock open. And what I didn't realize was the mic was actually open to the truck. And one of the executive producers at Fox Sports West heard it and came down and said, who was that? And like, it was that guy. And they pointed at me. And from that, they started while I was in college. The UCLA Sports Magazine show that was on Fox Sports West for a long period of time, actually had me as a special correspondent, and I would do a segment called The Farnham Files, and this was the time where The X-Files was very popular on Fox. So they built this whole interstitial into The Farnham Files, and I interviewed Coach Lav, and I interviewed Dan Gatzurek, and I showed people where we ate on campus and where we'd hang out as a team, and it was just a bunch of things like that, but it desensitized me to the camera and made me feel really comfortable. And then after I was done coaching at Pepperdine, I called up that same executive, Bruce, and was like, hey, I did all that stuff for free when I was in college. Is there a chance that, you give me a chance to try to make this a career? And that's kind of how the whole television stuff really started for me.
You didn't want to go to St. Bonaventure with Van Bernikoff? Like, you didn't go like, hey,
no,
I know we're
only in New York. As much as it's the Enchanted Forest, and Woj probably would have liked me a lot better had I been on that staff. But it was just, Doug, we all make decisions, right? And I had just, I knew the girl that I was going to marry. I had a couple years left of college, and I just proposed to her. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to leave that, because if she's got a year and a half left of college and I'm only in New York, I just don't think that would have been good for our relationship. And so that's what kind of helped push me more into the TV world than to continue to coach at that time. And it was 100% the right decision. Three kids later, 17 years in now in marriage, and a career that brings me a great deal of happiness. I mean, I don't look at it as a job. I look at it as just absolutely fun to be talking about hoop and studying hoop on a consistent basis.
Your first game. Do you remember what the first game you called?
Well, first time I ever did television, I was a sideline reporter for high school football for Los Alamitos versus Fountain Valley. And the hit was on their coach, Coach Barnes at the time for Los Al, who was a legendary coach in Southern California. And so I remember doing the hit, and it's the first time I ever had an IFBN. And I don't know what your experience was like, but I was ill-prepared for this. And so Waddy throws it down with John Jackson and says, hey, let's go down and welcome to our broadcast team, our newest high school reporter, Sean Farnham. Sean, and I start to do the talk, and my producer in the ear goes, Sean, lower third. And I literally, on camera, holding the mic, turned my head and said, what? Because I thought someone was talking. Now my mic is shaking because I'm nervous, and I realize I just screwed up on television. And I was like, well, this is going to be the last time I ever work on TV. And I fought my way through it. Game ends. Producer comes out of the truck, and I said, I'm so sorry. That was horrible. And he goes, look, the stuff you did in game was fine. Obviously, you've got to get more comfortable with an IFB. That's why you're doing high school football, and you're not doing anything more than that for right now. And that's kind of where I started to learn the business and start to cut my teeth and get a little bit better, working with people like Lindsay Soto, who's obviously gone on to a great deal of success with the NFL Network. And then it started in college basketball. And my first college basketball game was Cal State Fullerton versus UCI in the Brent Event Center.
Nice. Nice.
And I
went to
working
the first game
with Bill McDonald at the time. They had a guy, I want to say Topso, who I think was playing for, I think he was for Fullerton, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Pretty good player. And it was just fun. And from there, it kind of just started to move. I had an opportunity when Marcus Johnson, who was doing the games with Steve Fizioc at the time, was doing the All-Star game. And they actually had me go do a couple of national games pretty early on. And I got UCLA Arizona at the McHale Center, and that was Hassan Adams, Andre Iguodala, Stoudemire, and a pretty good UCLA team as well. So it was good, and it was fun, and I started to get that itch, and I started to find kind of like a little bit of a rhythm of just allowing myself to understand my limits and my strengths and my weaknesses as a broadcaster, and trying to find those out and grow, as I know you have over the course of your career as well.
Okay, let's go back to UCLA. You were there.
Yep.
I mean, part of when you were there is, Barron's freshman year was your freshman year, I believe, correct?
No, sophomore year.
Okay,
my sophomore year was his freshman year.
Right. Okay, so your sophomore year is his freshman year. And I do think people forget, like, he had a good NBA career, and maybe we can get to why it wasn't as good as it could have been. But his freshman year, he was such a freak. Like, he tore his ACL in that nasty move in the NCAA tournament. He, like, landed awkwardly on the dunk. But what was he like? What was the Baron Davis phenomenon like?
It was like an N1 mixtape before N1 mixtapes were, like, really popular. Every day at practice, he did something that would make your jaw hit the floor. I mean, and then in games, I mean, it was the exact same thing. But people forget how explosive he was. And, he, you know, he could jump from the free throw line and dunk it with ease. And the move that he tore his ACL on is still one of the best crossovers I think I've ever seen a person. It was against the 2-3 zone, and he was so quick out on the wing that the guy on the baseline for Michigan couldn't even step one step over before Barron was already at the rim with his head at the rim looking down as he dunked the ball. He had such a fun, natural joy for playing the game of basketball that, you know, as a competitor of practice, you're like, okay, just don't get caught. Like, that was the big thing for me. Like, I was like, just don't get caught. Like, know where Barron is at all times, because if they swing it real quick and you're in the help side position, he's probably going to smash it on you. And so you just kind of you kind of had to know where he was, because he was one of those guys that looked to try to dunk on you. And, you know, whether it was even in the NBA after tearing his ACL, the dunk on Andre Kirilenko, you know, Kevin Garnett. I mean, he had those moments even in his professional career. But going back to where he was in high school and when he showed up at UCLA, and I still remember the day he committed, and he committed on Fox Sports West. And it was like really the first time I think I can remember at least a guy committing on television. And the sound in the dorms at UCLA, the eruption of cheers when Barron announced that he was going to come to Westwood was amazing.
But
to listen
know,
to.
You didn't know they were going to get him?
I mean, my teammate. I mean, and then to watch him get picked, I think it was third overall in the draft, even coming back after that ACL, was just incredible.
Yeah, but I mean, Herrick sold his son. What did they? He sold his sister, he sold his sister a Chevy Bronco. Like, it was the dumbest stuff.
Maybe a Blazer. I think it was a Blazer.
It was a Blazer. And he sold it. Like, you know, who knows how they came up with the money or whatever. But there was, like, a legit transaction made. But just the idea that, like Jim, I like Jim Herrick, but that shit was crazy. Just the level.
And all that stuff was vetted, and obviously it was exposed. I mean, if you remember the LA Times articles that were coming out, I know you were in college at the same time. But I mean, that was a big deal, and there were stories about that written, and Barron, you know, through the compliance department and whatnot, everything was considered to be fine. But Barron as a teammate was wild. I mean, it was fun. There was a picture that was posted on Instagram not too long ago, and I forget who posted it. It might have been Earl that posted it, but it was a picture of Barron driving one of those service carts with Earl in the passenger seat and Jerron Rush in the back, and laying on like the back bed of the service car. It was inside the arena at Arizona State. They'd left the keys in it, and those three guys got in, took it on a joyride through the parking lot around our bus after we were done with shoot around. But that was that. I mean, that's just how it was. I mean, we were a little wild and it was a little crazy, but they were a ton of fun to have as teammates.
Yeah, that year you had. I mean, you had two of my AAU teammates, J.R. Henderson, Chris Johnson. You had Toby Bailey, who was like, he was like our rival, one of our rivals all growing up. You talk about a team staying on the same teams, whatever. Barron, Earl Watson, Jelani McCoy, same team. Like, that's a crazy, crazy talented team. You guys lost, what, to Kentucky? You guys got smashed by Kentucky. Why?
Yeah, that was the game after Barron tore his ACL. They came out and pressed us, and we turned it over a ton early in that game. I mean, it was over within 10 minutes. And that was at Tropicana Fields, and the baseball stadium had actually not been completed yet, and it was torrential downpour. We had to put, like, those little wraps around our shoes as we got off the bus because you were stepping in the mud. And that should have been an indication of how the night was going to go. Because when we stepped in that mud, we played like we were stuck in mud, and they just absolutely destroyed us. The other thing about that season people forget about, too, is Jelani ended up only playing a short amount of time that year, and then a suspension went into play, and he didn't play the remainder of the season. And so I always go back, and I always think to myself, like, if Jelani McCoy had not been suspended for a majority of that season, and then certainly for almost all of conference play, and then into the NCAA tournament, he was not available for us. If Barron doesn't tear his ACL, what that team could have accomplished, because as you know, with him being your teammate, Chris could flat out score with anybody.
Yep.
And he loved to shoot the basketball. J.R. Henderson's still playing professional basketball in Japan.
Which
I think it's like his 23rd season or whatnot over in Japan. But extremely talented as well. And that group, to me, that's the one thing that I look back on at UCLA. And you look at not only that team, but then you go the following year after that. And you've got Baron Davis, Earl Watson, and then you've got Matt Barnes.
Jerome Moiso, Dan Gedzrich.
Yeah. Jerome Moiso, who's a lottery pick for the Celtics. Yeah. I mean, it was a tremendously talented group of players that I was fortunate. And then when we lost Baron, we got Jason Capono for my senior year. I mean, so it was always silly as far as talent goes at UCLA during that stretch of time. And look, I think personally, looking back on it, I think we did underachieve. And I think that there were times that I look at it and go, man, there's no way we should have lost that game. There's no way we should have been bounced out of the tournament. In particular, Barron's final game at UCLA, we lost to Detroit Mercy in the first round of the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
And there's no reason for why that should have happened.
Did they go out?
Too much talent to be able to accomplish that.
Did they go out the night before the game? I remember because we were in Indy, and we beat. We beat Hofstra. No, Hofstra was my senior year. We beat Syracuse and then lost to Auburn. And I remember we beat Syracuse very early in the day, and then you guys played, I think, later on. And, like, there's, like, rumors. They're like, dude, I heard the UCLA guys went out the night before the game, and then you guys get beat by Detroit Mercy. And, you know, Jerron Russ was bad. Moiso didn't do anything.
Baron fouled out.
Yeah, Baron fouled out. And it was just bad, right? Like,
yeah, it was just bad. Now I don't know personally, and I would obviously tell you it's 20 years later, so I don't really care. I don't know if the guys did or not. I know I didn't. I know my roommate didn't. But it was just disappointing. They went to a zone on us, and we got stagnant real quick, and we settled for a lot of bad shots, and we still had a 4-point lead when Baron fouled out with like 2:54 left to go in the game. And then after Baron fouled out of the game, it just kind of the wheels fell off the wagon, and Jerron did not play nearly as well as he's shown that he could, and we kind of needed him to in particular that night.
Your last game was what, Iowa State? The Iowa State game? That was a great
Iowa State game at the Palace of Auburn Hills in 2000.
They
were
so good.
NCAA tournament.
We lost to that team twice. First time we got blown out, second time at their place, second time close game. But for you to go from a guy who was a walk-on to scholarship and starting, like how long did it take? Did you have the perspective while you were doing it of how special an accomplishment that was at UCLA? Or was it like the rest of us wrapped in the, like, I need to shoot more bitterness? And like, did you have the perspective of how incredible a climb that is from a guy who they didn't offer a scholarship to starting your last season and part of your previous season?
Yeah, it was amazing, Doug. Just because, again, I knew how limited of a basketball player I was, you know, and I've never made more of that whole thing. I think especially when I was in college, people made more about it than it really was. I just felt so grateful that I had John Wooden sitting behind my bench for all 4 years. And I remember on my senior day, he waved me over and looked at me and just said, "Well done." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm good. I don't really need anything more than that." It was an incredible ride, and you know, my first start was crazy because it was against Arizona. Arizona was undefeated, 14-0. I think they were seventh in the country. The game was January 2nd, 1999, and not that I remember. 82-75 final score. We won, but the day before, it was obviously New Year's Day, and we had a couple guys that, you know, hey, they just practice was showing some signs of guys not being dialed in as much as they need to be in. And Lav, being Lav, goes, you know, who wants to start? I raised my hand and said, "I'll start." And he goes, "Fine, Sean, you're starting." I was like, "Wait, what? I'm starting against Arizona? Like, that's all I needed to do to get a start?" And it's funny looking back on it, but I started, and I remember I immediately went to our video guy, who was a guy that at the time that had come from Indiana. It was a Bobby Knight guy. And I said, "I need every move that A.J. Bramlett has scored on in the last 5 games. And so he went up, and that back then it was VHS. You know, so you're pausing, record, and play. Guy pulls off of all these things. So I was like, okay, if I can just take away, push him off the block a little bit, take away this turn to this shoulder, I think I got a chance. And so I went out, and I played really well, and I played some hard-nosed defense. We got off to a good start. scored the second basket of the game off an assist from Earl. And as I was doing that, I almost inside, like, you know, that feeling where you're like almost hyperventilating, but you're trying to play cool, like you're really not. So that was a moment for me, especially since I didn't tell my parents, and they were coming to the game anyways. And so they drove down from Northern California, and they're sitting there. And when they announced me as a starter, just to look up and see my dad cry, that kind of gave me a good indication of that this was something special. And I never devalued those moments. And I knew there. And for people that didn't understand at the time why I'd be starting over like a Jerome Oliso or Matt Barnes, who obviously both of them went on for the NBA. Matt had a tremendous career of 15 years almost, I think. It was one of those things where Jerome really didn't like to start. I mean, he just was one of those guys like, I'd rather come off the bench and see how the game was going. Or Dan would be like, hey, you know, just let me come off the bench. And I would go out there for like 3 or 4 minutes. I'd ball reversal, set good screens, probably get an illegal offensive screen at some point in time just to make sure that they kind of knew that a screen was coming. And then I go sit down and I'd watch the pros play. And that's the reality of what my role was, even when I was starting. And I accepted that and enjoyed it because I knew I wasn't a shooter. Like, who'd you want shooting the ball? You've got out of the floor when I started my first game, you had Baron Davis, you had Earl Watson, you had Jerome Oliso, you had Ray Young, who was a really good shooter, right, and a McDonald's All-American, and then you had me. Who's the last guy you want shooting the ball out on the floor?
Sure.
Me. And I was smart enough to realize that and go, hey, this is my role, this is what I could do. But looking back on it, it gives me more pride than probably I had when I was going through it, just to wear that uniform and to be out on the floor.
There's a lot of fascinating elements to it. Are you a pay-the-players guy?
No. No. And I always use myself as the biggest example. I mean, my points per game, I think for points per game, I might be one of the most successful college basketball players in the history of college basketball. And I say that jokingly. But, you know, when you look at the forum that UCLA provided for me, first of all, I left school and my first check went into my pocket. I was hired as a full-time assistant coach at Pepperdine at 22 years of age. I was coaching a player that redshirted a year who I played against in the California State Championship, and Derek Anderson. Then to be able to go into this broadcasting career, I wouldn't have had those opportunities had I not played basketball at UCLA. I realize that.
Why don't...
Look at one of my teammates, Bob Myers. Yeah. I mean, Bob Myers is the general manager of the Golden State Warriors after being a very successful NBA agent with Arne Tellem originally out of college.
Right.
There were relationships that you can build and you can foster that can help set up the rest of your life. And that's why I think we are devaluing the college education a little bit right now in a lot of these discussions that we're having.
Well, I think what happens is when you and I say college education, people think of like the classroom. And one, the classroom's actually changed in which we went there, where I do think that a lot of the things they teach now are more useful instead of some of the things that were taught then. But it's about the experiences you have, the people you meet. First, like just getting into UCLA, like you were a very good student. You probably would have gotten in your own right. But like JR wouldn't have. Chris Johnson, he was a good student, but might not have. Baron wouldn't have. Like, doesn't matter. Like, people don't understand how hard it is to get into UCLA, especially when you're from the state of California. They want foreign money. So just getting in has a value. Going to the school has a value because you're in terms of this is post-tax, it's expensive, but all right. But the other value is the experience and the people that you're around, and you're a member of the UCLA family. That extends to all the basketball people, all the coaches, all the people in entertainment, and you're in Los Angeles where, like, again, like if you're part of the UCLA family, like I don't understand that so many of the people that have been through the same system like you and I have don't have a real appreciation for the doors that they've opened. Like, I had Billis on the pod last year, and I think he's great, and he's become a close friend. But I'm just like, look, dude, all you Duke guys, sorry, if you didn't go to Duke, you wouldn't have these jobs. You just wouldn't. It doesn't mean you weren't a great player. Doesn't mean you're not a good guy. Doesn't mean you're not good with the English language. But there's a reason that Duke is such a powerful brand. It creates your brand and helps build you up. That's why there's so many Duke guys on TV.
Now, there's no question that my experiences at UCLA literally opened the door to being a college coach and to the TV world. And when I talk about the college education, I think a lot of times right now we are in the get to the end result as quickly as possible type of situation. Look, I'm in favor of guys getting drafted right out of high school. I don't know how you feel about that. I think if you're good enough to go out of high school, go. You want to get paid? Go. But if you opt into the college system, you're going to gain a lot of experiences through that. There's a young soccer player, female soccer player. Her name is Olivia Moultrie, and I don't know if you've talked about her at all, Doug, or know about her. She's 13 years old. She was already committed, by the way, to go to North Carolina. She now can't go to North Carolina. She signed a marketing deal with Wasserman through Nike. She's been in a couple of Nike commercials that were shown during the World Cup, and she's now trying to play professionally, even though she can't technically play professionally because she's not old enough, and she's part of the Thorns up in Portland. Like, you know how many experiences she's missing? Never mind the development and the maturity aspect of life through going to play in college. Okay? She's not even having a high school experience. She's not going to homecoming. Like, I think we're missing the – we're so at the end result of do they deserve money and should guys get paid more? You know, Zion, how much money did Zion make this year? People forget that coming into the year, R.J. Barrett was the guy we were all talking about was going to be the number one pick.
Right.
I mean, Zion made a lot of money by playing for Duke this
no
year.
Question.
He just had to wait until he could cash in on it. The same could be said for Trae Young the previous year. We were talking about DeAndre Ayton. We were talking about Marvin Bagley. We were talking about Michael Porter Jr. You didn't come into the college basketball season being like, man, Trae Young, he's going to light this place on fire early, and we're going to make him the face of the game. No, he earned that. And then subsequently, even though he did not get paid while he was at Oklahoma, when he went and decided to be pro, he was able to cash in on that eight-month investment that he made in himself by playing in the college game.
No question.
There is a brand recognition and a household name. I don't remember, and people talk about the G League, and again, if you want to go get paid, go get paid. If you want to be RJ Hampton and go to New Zealand, do it. Great. Go make money. Awesome for you. I don't know how many highlights we're going to see of RJ this year on television. I don't. I know that we're going to see a ton of highlights of Cassius Stanley at Duke. I know we're going to see a ton of highlights of, you know, guys like Nico Mannion at Arizona. We're going to see a Cole Anthony at North Carolina. We're going to see a ton of highlights of those guys, and those guys are going to become household names here in about 4 months as soon as the season gets going.
I agree with you. I just we do this thing. My thing about the drafted at a high school deal is I just they're all going to go. Like, they're just all going to go. And then
that's fine. Then if they make a bad decision, they make a bad decision. You can't protect people from making a bad decision. But at the end of the day, I don't think it impacts the brand of college basketball. College basketball will survive, just as it did when guys like Kobe, Amari Stoudemire,
Darius Miles never played. I understand. I think, look, I just think you keep it as is. And if guys want to go to the G League, they can. They want to go overseas, they can. Like, I don't understand this. Right? Like, you can go right to the G League. You can go right and play for a year. They don't want to, because what's going to happen is they're going to declare, and they're all going to go, and they're all going to be in the G League, and some of them, a lot of them will wash out, and we won't talk about it. We'll only talk about the ones that made it. And those are the stories that get relayed to those guys. I mean, think about the second-round picks, the Draymonds and whatever who have made it. Those are the ones we talk about. You look at those drafts, and there's, you know, two or three of those guys that are still in the NBA. So
the other aspect of that, would you rather be on a bus traveling to play in some small facility, like, you know, and being in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, or would you rather fly on a charter, staying at the best hotels in the world, playing on ESPN in the SEC, and being part of Kentucky?
It's not comparable.
Auburn, and by the way,
and by the way, like, you might be on that bus anyway when you get done. So, like, enjoy. We take the joy out of basketball. We take the joy out of playing with guys your age. And because we like you said, we're all about, like, how much did you get paid? Like, how much am I going to get paid? How much am I going to gain in terms of experience? I'll just tell you this. I played minor league basketball, played USBL, CBA, IBA, ABA. And there's no question the basketball, the talent was, skill was better than college basketball. It was not fun. You know, waiting for checks, living in a hotel, traveling on buses, $20 a day per diem, no thanks. Like, no thanks. And I'm not sure there's the right people explaining this to those guys. They only, again, see end results. And look, it's better now because now some of them train in the same facility, but they don't practice that much. They're not getting nearly the number of game reps. They're not being coached. To be a G League coaches, for the most part, are guys that are trying to get their first head coaching gig. Many of them are young. Some of them are high school coaches. It doesn't mean they're bad coaches. But, like, look, you could play for Tom Izzo. You could play for Cal. You could play for Krzyzewski. You could play for Bill Self. Or you can play for a guy who's literally never been a head coach before just because you want to get those NBA socks, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And I do think it's going to hurt college basketball substantially.
I think the guys that will come will continue to grow. I think they'll continue to develop. We'll have plenty of people to talk about. And sure, when the rule changes and guys get to go straight out of high school again, because I do believe that's going to happen in the next CBA, that we're going to lose, probably 6 to 7 on average, top 6 to 7. If more than that leaves, then they're getting really bad advice. And again, we can talk about the D'Angelo Collins of the world who made the decision to declare instead of go to college, and then we've never heard of since. That's going to happen. And you can't protect people from making bad decisions, but what you can do is to give them the opportunity. And I think opportunity should be there, just as it is right now to go to the G League, just as it is right now to go overseas. If you're going to give them that opportunity, then give them the opportunity to play in the NBA. I mean, it's not going to make that big of a difference, at least from my perspective. And I think the college game has endured. I think the pageantry of it, the environments that you go to, whether it's, you could call a game at Butler, call a game at Allen Fieldhouse, call a game at Cameron. I mean, call a game at Rupp. And I know you've been at all those places, Doug. Those are special environments. That's not going to change.
Your favorite place you've ever been is what? Or where?
Allen Fieldhouse. First time I went to Allen Fieldhouse. And part of the reason is that my father-in-law, who passed away in November, went with me when I did that game. And just listening to the Rock Chalk pageantry of it, to see the rules of the game of basketball, to walk through that center area that has all that rich history of everything that is KU basketball. I just think that is a spectacular environment to be at. And if you like college basketball and you go there and you don't fall in love with it walking out, like, I don't think you have a heartbeat. Cameron's great. The Kennel is great up in Spokane. That's one of my favorite places to call a game as well, because the students just bring it every single night. It's the environments that have the best student bodies that make the college environments the best.
And then you combine it, I do think Butler, Kansas, Duke, they're like cathedrals in how they're built. They kind of the classic plaster, classic architecture as well kind of helps. And then you add in the students and great teams, and it makes it more amazing. All right, least favorite place.
I have to think about that. I mean, because honestly, you've been through all the Big Ten places. Those are all great. I mean,
Northwestern's new place is awesome. I don't know if you've been, but their new place is amazing.
I haven't been to their new place. Oh. Even when I did their old place, it was still packed.
It was a bad high school gym. Their new place, honestly, might be my favorite new place. Like, it's perfect.
Okay.
It's perfect.
I'd have to think about that. Like, in the SEC, like, everybody's pretty good. Like, and that's where I've spent a lot of my last 4 years. College Station, even when I was at College Station a couple of years ago when Ben Simmons showed up, I mean, that place, Fire Marshal had to kick people out.
Yeah.
I mean, it was insane.
Yeah.
I'd have to think, Brent Event Center, is it great for Irvine? I mean, I don't do a lot of games there anymore, but, like, calling the games there, like, that wasn't great. Firestone Fieldhouse is pretty low on the list. Like, Pepperdine definitely.
See, I think of Pepperdine as, like, one of the all-time overrated schools. Because when you ask people about – let me explain my logic behind it, okay? Because I went to Jim Herrick's camp back when he's the coach at Pepperdine. I mean, you had to walk up and down that damn hill to go to the stairs to go to eat lunch. But it has a great view, but it's not on the beach, right? There's, like, the colonies over there, so you have the street. you have PCH, and then you have houses. Like, you know, whereas UC Santa Barbara, you literally have dorms on the beach. Like, the beach is part of the school.
I would agree with you on that. And honestly, here was the thing about Firestone, especially when I was there. Locker rooms were really bad. The facility is not great in the location where it is on campus. Parking is a bear for people to come to the games. Nobody really wants to go to the games. A lot of the local people don't get out. Yep. Even that was when the team was really good. I mean, I was coaching there the year after they beat Indiana and ended Bob Knight's career at Indiana.
Yeah, then we beat them.
And we had all those guys back. Brandon Armstrong, Zed Suet, Craig Lewis.
My boy Lala.
Gibbs, David Lalazarian.
Yeah.
Like, that was a really good team, and we still struggled to get people to come watch games. And I think to me, that's a big part of it. You've got to be able to – your student body makes up the environment, as I said earlier. You've got to have people that are there, and then the facility has to be – have a great feel. And I think that's one area where Pepperdine desperately – and I think Lorenzo Romar's working on it – to try to get a new facility, something else there that they can take better pride in. Because that facility, we used to train and work out downstairs underneath it, which, because there's no student rec center, is the exact same place where students are working out, and our players would have to wait to get on machines as a student was finishing up.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Okay, you are, I've done a lot of things with the American Cancer Society. You've done probably even more. You host the event, Lon Kruger's event in Vegas, and you're putting on a youth basketball tournament this weekend. At what? At Mamba?
At Mamba Sports Academy out in Thousand Oaks, California. And Doug, you and I have shared our own experiences. You lost your father, obviously. I lost my father-in-law in November after 14 years. And the call to try to help and Coaches Versus Cancer is a great organization, American Cancer Society. And I've been part of Lon's event for 5 years now, hosting that. I've been part of the Nashville event now for the last 3 years. And watch that event grow. And last year I ran a tournament with Russell White, who just took the job at Cal Lu to be their head basketball coach from Crespi. And we hosted an 8-team tournament. We raised about $19,000. This year we've moved it to Mamba. The expenses obviously go up when you're using a facility like that. And thankfully the Mamba Sports Foundation donated a couple of the courts for the entire weekend for us. And we've got to pick up the charge on the rest of them. But we've got 32 teams lined up for this weekend. And some great raffle prizes that will be given out. And I've got one that's available online. If people go to my Twitter, at Sean Farnham, you can see it. We've got two nights stay at the MGM Grand, two lower bowl tickets for the Utah-Kentucky game at T-Mobile Arena. Obviously, you have to pay for your own airfare and travel there. But a $10 donation to the link that's on my Twitter page. And that puts your name in the hopper for every $10 you donate. Your name goes in the hopper, and we're going to pull that out on Sunday and raffle away that item. I've got a couple of other items that we're going to be giving away at the venue this weekend, including a VIP experience at Pauley Pavilion. The UCLA Athletic Department donated two courtside seats for the UCLA-Denver game, as well as valet parking, as well as Pavilion Club tickets to be able to get food and drinks before the game and at halftime. We're going to raise somewhere, I think, realistically, I put it at $60,000. I think we're going to probably come closer to about $30,000, but that's mainly because of expenses, and it's a year of growth for what we're trying to do. But this is going to be something that I do annually, and I'm naming the brackets after people that are close to me that have lost their fight with cancer or are battling cancer right now. And we're gonna name each division. It's not gonna be like a 12U, 13U. Yeah, the teams are gonna be those age groups, but we're gonna have it, and their bios are gonna be up next to those brackets so that people understand what we're doing and what we're trying to help and what we're trying to accomplish here. Too many of these tournaments, and Doug, you know it, they're making a ton of money for people, and that's great. Profitability and being successful in life is awesome.
Yep.
But sometimes not taking a dime and really teaching kids, like, hey, you can use this game to give back and help others. And that's been the most important aspect over the last 2 years for me in trying to develop something where I feel like at least I'm trying to do my part.
It's awesome. I will commit to putting my teams in it next year. We just, based on the timing with the summer and, you know, the schools in Orange County, some of them don't start until September. So I just don't feel like I don't want to go out there and get smashed with my 12Us. You know?
Don't worry, Doug. I'm going to get you next year, and we're going to also look to move the dates.
because we've run into some issues with some of the teams that have been like, hey, we'd love to come, but this is a down period for us. And I was like, okay, hey, then I got to work with some other people. And, you know, luckily, because of relationships, guys like Ryan Silver, who do West Coast Elite, guys like Max Piner, who does OGP, we're gonna talk to them and try to figure out a weekend where we're not going head to head against one of their events.
Yeah, they have a big event. OGP has one this weekend.
Yeah, so we're gonna try to avoid going head to head in the future, and try to find a way that we can really maximize this and raise as much money as we possibly can.
Awesome stuff. Follow Sean on Twitter. Let me give out your Twitter handle here, Sean.
At Sean Farnham.
Okay, at Sean Farnham. I have the at Doug Gottlieb, but I don't know the password, and I don't know how to get it. That was back when I was at ESPN, so I do at Gottlieb Show. So, and if you want to get in on those, you go to his website, and you can get in on those door prizes, or you can simply donate straight away to the American Cancer Society or Coaches versus Cancer. Farney, you're doing great stuff, man. Happy that you're happy with your family. Keep it up on ESPN, keeping everybody in line and get up, and thanks for joining me.
No problem, Doug. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
My thanks to Sean Farnham. What a great dude. Awesome cause. All right, that's it for All Ball. Make sure that you, one, listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show, 3 to 6 Eastern time, 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio, on the iHeartRadio app, on the Dan Patrick channel on SiriusXM. That's 217 and 203. And don't be afraid to send this to a friend, to tweet out one of your boys. Download, subscribe, and rate. Hope you enjoyed this version of All Ball. I'm Doug Gottlieb.